This is Sheila Q on DH Radio at CJMQ 88.9 FM. Now, as you listeners know, the month of April is Autism Awareness Month, and every week I'll be bringing you some information, interesting people, stories from around the world about autism. Now, when my son Angus was diagnosed, or when I was starting to entertain the possibility of him having autism, I'm a research junkie, so I started researching and getting information and finding out about different people out there with autism and families coping with autism. And one of the amazing things that was brought to my attention was the story of this boy named Ellis and his dad, Jason, and their communication that was developed through drawings. And now, being somebody who is always kind of leaned on the artsy side, that really struck a chord with me. And when my aunt gave Angus a birthday present with one of Ellis's cards attached, I was just so amazed and taken with it. Now, on the phone with me now is Jason Goldsmith. This is so exciting. This is like celebrity time for me. And Jason's son, Ellis, is that boy. And the Big Blue Hug is their endeavor and their amazing works of art. Jason, welcome to DH Radio.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you so much.
Now, you know what, even more exciting than talking to you on the radio, you're going to be in the township soon, and people need to know that right off the bat, that you're going to be in town. So let's launch with that. Okay. Then we're going to talk about the story and remind everybody at the end of the interview that that you're going to be here.
Yeah, okay, great. So, yeah, I'll be doing a talk at the CRDITD,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be held at the Hope Community Center at 102, where is it? 102
Prospect?
Queen Street.
Oh, Queen Street, right,
yeah,
okay.
In Lenoxville.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very excited because I get to talk to about 40-odd parents and support workers and social workers and a whole mixed bag of parents and professionals about a little bit about my story, but mostly how they can use drawings to communicate and relate and reach to their kids.
So take us back to the beginning of your story with Ellis, wherever that feels like the right place to start.
It started when I was looking for a way to connect with him. We were doing different therapies at the time, and we were doing ABA, actually, and
mm-hmm.
For Ellis, that wasn't working very well.
That's applied behavioral analysis for anybody out there who's wondering what that...
Yeah, exactly.
So how old would Ellis have been around the time that you were trying these different things?
Well, we were doing ABA and teach methods, behavioral-based methods, from the age of 3 until the age of 5. And then... Then, of course, his services got cut, and lo and behold, I was left with no services at all. So we went from 20 hours of ABA, which was at least better than nothing, because at least he was getting some form of stimulation, and then nothing, because he reached school age, and he was going to be put into a regular school with only half an hour of speech a week, and I was pulling my hair out and terrified that my son would lose whatever progress that he had already gained
mm-hmm.
Up until the age of 5. And at that age, he was, you knew that there was intelligence there, but it was so bottled up and so so undeveloped that he was still at an emotional age of like 6 or 9 months old. He didn't relate to people. He treated them like objects. And his ability to communicate was still extremely limited. He probably had, like, I don't know, 50 to 75 words, word vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did was I quit my job as an industrial designer
mm-hmm.
Because I felt that nothing was going right. He wasn't getting any therapies. I didn't even know what kind of therapies I could use with him because the only thing I knew at the time was ABA. Which the government cut, so I didn't even have that.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit my job. I spent 1 year getting to know his needs and putting my life together. and which meant putting our lives together. And then I discovered that the book from Temple Grandin, Thinking in Pictures.
Yes.
And so I figured, well, maybe if my son thinks in pictures and not in words, I'll start using drawings to communicate with him. And so what I did is I started scribbling to him if I had something to say to him. It wasn't just because we tend to overuse words.
Yeah.
We tend to use our words all the time. We're big chatterboxes. And with kids with autism, especially those who are very, very visual, which is most of them, they lose track of our words. We go on and on and on, and they only process maybe one or two in a sentence, and then they lose us. So I said, well, why don't I start drawing in order to help him understand my words better? And only after about 4 months, he started to draw back to me. And that completely changed our lives because we finally had a common language.
So what would you do? Like, give me an example of a drawing that you would do to him in those 4 months that were leading up to him responding back. What would be a situation where you would have an image to draw?
The first time that it happened, I just would ask him to do something very simple, setting the table. And I would use only two words in order to ask him to set the table. So I would say fork and knife. That's all I wanted him to get. He understood I wanted him to get it. I would just say fork, knife. And he would wander away into the kitchen, forget what I said because he couldn't hold on to those words in his head,
mm-hmm.
and come back with a spoon and then wander off and not know what to do with the spoon. So I drew a picture of a fork and a knife on the chalkboard. And he saw those pictures. He went right to the kitchen, grabbed the fork and knife, slapped the fork and the knife against that picture, and then with an authority, slapped them onto the table. It was like bang and then bang. And it's like, there, did it, understood. So
concrete, like that's so, yeah.
And it just boggles the mind how I just couldn't believe he didn't understand a simple word, fork and knife. It's not that he didn't understand it, but there's so much going on in their bodies and in their brains that words often don't work.
Yeah.
So enhancing my language with anchoring my words using pictures allowed him to hold on to the meaning of my words.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually what happened was because I was putting my words onto paper or onto chalkboard all the time, he started to interact with my drawings. And then when he had something to say, he can either modify my drawing and eventually started drawing his own. And that's how I started celebrating our conversations by turning him into art.
Oh, it's just the coolest thing. Now, the Big Blue Hug is the name that you've chosen to represent your artwork. And if people want to see what you guys have done, you can go to thebigbluehug.com.
That's right.
Tell the story of the Big Blue Hug.
That was one of Ellis's classic ways of stalling to go to bed. So many of our early drawings were drawn because he was finding some way to not go to bed, and all of a sudden he becomes communicative.
Human beings like to, when it's something they want, man.
Oh, definitely, definitely. All day long, he's not saying much, and he's not responding, and then just before he goes to bed, the autism, you know, disappears, and all of a sudden he's social, and he's happy, and he wants to talk. So he started, he was stalling before going to bed, and at some point, I knew he was just trying to play me, so I ignored him. I'm like, that's it. I don't care what you do, what you say. You're going to bed. And he decided that he wanted to ask me for a hug, and I was not listening to him. I didn't know he wanted a hug. I was just like cutting him off all the time. Nope, going to bed, going to bed, going to bed. It's 10 o'clock. Go to bed. And so he went to the chalkboard, and he drew a hug on the chalkboard. And then I stopped me right in my tracks, and I looked at it, and he pointed at it, and he said, hug. And it completely melted my heart.
Of course. Oh, my goodness.
And so, you know, just from little examples like this, you could see how drawing had the ability to talk by drawings changed our lives completely because we actually had access to each other. I remember when I was drawing to him, and I drew a picture of us going to school together. I was trying to tell him, I would draw to help him anticipate what was going to happen. That's what we do. That I was modeling, I was using drawings as a way to model what we do naturally through language. And very often what we do through language is we use our words to help anticipate things, right? We're going to do this, or we're going to do that. How would you like if we got this or got that? And that's something that happens in the future, and you use your words to predict what's going to happen. I couldn't do that with Ellis. He lived in the moment. If I said, tomorrow we're going to do this or that, he understood we're going to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
So I would draw what we're going to do ahead of time. And so I drew a picture of us going to school together. I drew a picture of us walking, holding hands with our hats and gloves and on a pathway to go to school. And then he erases the holding hands. He didn't want to hold my hand. And so, yeah, his personality was shining through. And it was spectacular to see what kind of person he really was. Because you couldn't see that unless he was drawing it.
Wow. That's just, it's the whole idea of what is communication.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. How those particularly verbal ones of us just can't imagine there existing this other whole other sphere and world. It's just it is all communication. That's just so.
Well, everything's communication. Everything we do and everything we don't do is communication. And you kind of learn that when you have a kid who exists differently.
Yeah.
With our kids, because they're very often nonverbal, you have to read their body language
mm-hmm.
all the time. You're constantly reading the signs, how they fidget, how they move, if they move at all, the stimming
mm-hmm.
That they do always has a meaning. Everything that these people do, especially when they're young, has a meaning, and very often we tend to treat those behaviors as simple behaviors. You know, don't stim. Don't make that noise. And that's it. Instead of looking to the reason why they're making that noise, why are they behaving a certain way, and understanding that, in fact, that's a communication.
Yeah.
There's a reason for it. Once you understand the reason for their behaviors, you can be you're much better equipped to deal with their issues.
Now, how old is Ellis today?
He is 13 years old.
Wow.
He's gotten his first mustache.
Oh my goodness, really?
Oh, God, yeah.
So, tell me about what life with him is like now. His first mustache. His first mustache. I just love it.
It's crazy. I know. It's just, I like to yank on it every morning. Wake up, and he's like, nah, and so then I yank on it to remind him he's a man. You have to wake up now. And it's funny because we hearken back to SpongeBob cartoons where SpongeBob desperately wants a mustache. So he's officially older than SpongeBob. he's a character. He's changed so much. He's talking now. When he was younger, he was his primary mode of communication was drawing. That was his first language. English was his second language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all Quebecers, his second language is French.
Wow,
his first language is English.
Yeah.
And he even wants to learn Spanish, so he's actually become a communicator, and that's the amazing thing, is that I've learned through this journey that so many of the ideas that we have about autism are misrepresentations of what we think of as autism. They can't, they don't have a sense of humor, they don't want to make friends, they don't have theory of mind, which is the ability and or desire to understand what people are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They can't think flexibly, they like structure beyond everything else.
Yeah.
And it's like we turn them into robots.
Well, I think it's like we like structure more than anything else. You know,
well, we like structure with dealing with something as challenging as autism. It's easier. It's just easier to learn a recipe than it is to learn a process.
Well, that's it. Like I've realized with Angus that as much as I hear these things about routine and scheduling and sameness and whatever, that I think to a certain extent, it's not so much that it's his thing, but that it's been my desperation to compartmentalize so I can understand what's going on and how to best help him and be with him, you know, whereas I think he's, in my case, I think that he's probably the freer thinker between the two.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the advantages, and we don't really talk much about that, but the advantages of being autistic or of having any kind of difference of thinking,
mm-hmm.
Which is a difference of living, and it's a different perception. So, in a way, that does free you up in certain ways. It's
a different kind of permission, sort of, to be.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, they don't have the same. You're not. I'd like to see if you're going to find someone who has autism and is going to be a snob and who's going to judge you according to the way you dress.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
start a war.
Or at least if they become snobs, they'll judge you perhaps on something else, but certainly not the way that we judge other people. You know, how you dress and how much you make and what do you drive and all this sort of thing. It's the cultural standards by which we understand people is very different in the autism world, and I find it fascinating.
Yeah, and it is liberating when you think about it.
Autism is sort of like the next cultural revolution.
That's what I think too, and maybe even the next stage in evolution.
Or maybe even the next stage in evolution. Maybe we'll all become Spocks.
Yeah.
Or cats, apparently. No. All people or all kids with all everyone. What's the title of that book? Everyone who has autism. Cat. All cats. That's right. All cats have autism.
Oh my goodness!
And all
I have to find that.
ADHD.
That's awesome. That's what about goldfish? Now, what about goldfish? Now I'm now you've got
goldfish.
Me wondering.
Well, yeah,
turtles,
we're talking about
hamsters.
Above ground mammals here.
Okay.
Well, dolphins. I'm sure dolphins are not autistic.
No. Hey, so as far as Ellis's schooling and that sort of thing goes, what's he doing for school?
So he's at school called Giant Steps, and it's a school that is the only school that I'm aware of. I believe it's the only school in Quebec that's devoted strictly to autism.
Yeah.
It's bilingual, and their mission is integration, so they integrate children into the mainstream as much as the child's able to handle.
Yeah.
And he, so he's learning to read, and he's writing, and he's having life skills, math, so like addition and subtraction. He's still learning his fractions, and he's using money and counting money and using it. So you know, I look at it as a marathon. I'm no longer in that phase when he was first diagnosed and up till around the age 5, that torturous, horrible phase where you feel like you have a time limit to help him, and if you don't, you failed.
Oh yeah,
and he's going to be. A child's going to be stuck in this horrible prison called autism if you don't reach a certain level of functioning by a certain age. To me, it's a marathon. He's going to have autism his whole life, and just like I have my personality my whole life, and he has the potential to grow and grow and grow and change and change. In fact, now that he's older, contrary to what the developmental sciences will tell you, he's grown and changed more now than he ever has when he was younger.
Wow.
His change was, like, there were times when I hadn't seen any movement in his vocabulary for, like, 2 years, and that's forever when you're really young.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I've seen so much change now. You know, he's become a different person. He's become a learner. He's finally at a stage where he will ask me questions. He wants to know about the world. I'm no longer having to prompt him for everything. He's prompting me. Tell me about this. I want to know that. He's looking at my facial expressions, and he's like, what's that mean? What's that mean? What's that mean? Like, I can't do anything now without him, like, cross-examining. What are you doing? What does that mean?
Wow. That's
and so a lot of that stems from a focus of making life meaningful for him.
Mm-hmm.
Not just teaching him scripts, not just teaching him that when this happens, you do that, and that's it. Teaching him, well, that's where drawing comes into it. Drawing allowed me to really pinpoint areas where I was able to explain to him just about anything I wanted to explain to him. So, like, as a very tiny example, one day he dropped some water on his pants and they were wet. And I was telling him that, no, it's okay, it's not juice, it's going to dry. And so he didn't quite understand what I meant, it's going to dry. How's it going to dry? So I used drawings to explain to him evaporation.
Wow.
And so I would draw a sequence of steps of, you know, water lands on your pants, and then it's wet, and then, you know, I draw a couple of other pictures that show that the water is disappearing and that it's actually evaporating into the air, and that if enough water evaporates, it forms a cloud. And, you know, like, I couldn't use my words to explain this.
Yeah.
If it was a typical kid, I could. But with Ellis, he's capable of understanding. But and the visual mode of communicating allows me to do that and explain to him life step by step.
It's just, I think that this is, the fact that you've shared this is such a great potential tool for so many families out there. And that's one of the most important things, I think, when anyone is facing a situation and we need new knowledge and ideas and potential avenues to helping make the best of our lives. Like, that's just, what a gift, Jason Goldsmith.
Thank you so much.
I can't wait for you to come to the townships. So April 27th, I think, is the date?
Yep, April 27th. I'll be in the morning, and I believe it's from 10 until 3. Yes, that's right, 10 until 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I can... maybe I can have a sale of what sell my paintings afterwards. I'm not sure. I'd have to speak to the people organizing this.
That's such a great idea.
That'd be pretty cool.
We will keep the listeners up to date with what's going on and make sure that people know where you're going to be. And if they want more information, I know you can contact CRDITED Sherbrooke. Estree, actually, I think is the name. And I'll put all that information on my Facebook page as well, too. Thank you so much, Jason.
Oh, thank you, Sheila. It's been wonderful.